This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Gary Null has done us a favor. He's sticking around for a couple of minutes. I wanted to talk to him. And then we have a couple of guests coming up this hour. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Mike.
I do have Kevin Zeese on, who is a legal advisor to the Bradley Manning Support Group. He's going to give us an update about Bradley Manning in a couple of minutes. And then at 1:30, somebody from the Brennan Center for Justice, who's going to talk about the Supreme Court reaffirming its Citizens United stance on Monday when they, you know, squashed that Montana law that stood for 100 years. But what I wanted to ask you was, first of all, I'd love to have you come on sometime on the show here on Occupied Territory to give your opinion about the activities of Occupy and the ideas that they're espousing. Would that be a good thing?
Happy to do that, yes.
Yeah, I'd love to get your wisdom on that, because this whole argument about violence and nonviolence and what actions to take and... But the one question, I guess, today before I go to my guests is, do you have an opinion about the Supreme Court decision today?
Well, I'm out of contact. I'm not near television or anything. I'm not even a computer, so I haven't heard what it was.
Well, good for you. You're not near any of that stuff, first of all. But secondly, it's a 5-4 decision upholding the mandate, so essentially upholding the whole law. But it's tortured reasoning. And of course, I'm for single payer. I'm guessing you might be, but I don't know for sure.
I'm for single payer, but it's obvious that with the enormous amount of lobbying and with all the ALEC activity and with the number of actual consultants who do not have to register as lobbyists, and therefore the 43,000 official lobbyists, is just probably a token amount, because now you have specialists, you have special advisors, and you have consultants. And those are in the tens of thousands. In fact, Washington, if nothing, is just swarming with people who are loaded with money from special interests and corporations, and who then bring in foundations and the experts, the talking heads, who go before committees and argue the case of why something should or should not be a law, or what provisions we should or should not enact or in some way change. That means the average person has virtually no say-so in the current scheme of things in Washington, that nothing is being done to help enhance our life, ensure the equality of our lives, our health on any level, because nothing is being done to, A, in the current health plan, there is no provision for preventing any disease. Mm-hmm. Nothing. There is no provision for providing the best medical care for a given disease. Now, when you understand that 70% of the people who filed for bankruptcy claims this past year were fully covered, mm-hmm. so their policy would be no different than the existing policy, then it shows you the fraud of the so-called notion that, well, we're going to insure people, and by insuring them, they'll be able to get medical care. That is not true. You may be insured, but at the end of the day, there will be a decision made by an insurance company individual, and that was written into their bills when they met on 7 separate occasions with the White House chief of staff who was handling this, and a person from the National Institutes of Health. They will be the final arbiter of what a doctor or hospital will be able to do. So if you have a finger that's been severed in an accident, and you take the finger and you go to an emergency room, you may or may not be able to get that sewed back on based upon what the insurance company deems is a model that they can accept or reject. Their interest is only profit.
There's also nothing in this law, by the way, that prevents them from raising copays and deductibles through the roof anytime they want.
And all they have to do is raise it without any oversight. Mm-hmm. So because they have no oversight, and since all they've done is raise premium prices, my insurance has gone up almost 100% in the last 2 years.
Yeah, same with mine.
So then it does not also take care of children who have a pre-existing condition and the end stages of disease. There's no implementation of catastrophic events in here.
So I do want to get to my guess, but would you say it's a setback in a way to actually approve this law? It's almost like they approved a Band-Aid, but the cancer is still there, right?
Absolutely. And the biggest problem here, Mike, is one that I've worked on for almost 7 years, and that is what I call death by medicine, which is a major report. It's up on my website, free for people to look at. Only using their peer review information, we proved unequivocally that every year for the past 20 years, the number one cause of death in the United States is iatrogenesis, or medically induced death. And the number one cause of injury is medically induced injury. When you add it up, and I'm going to be very conservative. I'm going to go to our figures, not the Harvard professor, the medical researcher who actually did the first studies. He said 1,000,001 die. I'm saying 700,000 die. Well, if you look at that and apply that to the number of people who now must get medical treatment, then you're adding over 70,000 deaths a year that will be caused by people getting the treatment that otherwise they would have sought out some other option for. So that's the part of the argument that the people who think they know what they're talking are not talking about.
Well, so this is one of the things I want to talk about next week, especially also the whole theory and practice of the whole Occupy movement, because that's what this show is about. But I'm keeping my guest on from Bradley Manning Support Group. I appreciate your sticking around.
Happy to come in any time and talk about this in depth.
Yeah, I'd like to hear definitely what we have to discuss about the Occupy movement, because, you know, there's plenty to talk about. All right, so next week maybe?
Next week I'll be back in the city. I'll be back in the studio. Happy to be there, Mike.
That's great, Gary.
Have a good show.
Thank you. Do we have our guest on the line? All right. We have a guest today, Kevin Zeis, who is a legal advisor for the Bradley Manning Support Group. He's a whole lot more things. Been very active in the single-payer movement. But he's on today to talk to us about, give us an update about what's happening Bradley Manning. Hello, Kevin.
How you doing?
You're wearing a lot of hats today, right, because you've been so active
We're very active with the single-payer movement, and what is a tremendous setback today, I think, for real health care for Americans. This is a big win for Wall Street insurance and a big loss for American consumers, even though a lot of Americans don't realize it yet.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think they've got the wool pulled over their eyes because of this band-aid, this giant, really lively colored band-aid that got pasted over this. But there's plenty of time to talk about that, and we have before and will again. As far as Bradley Manning goes, the reason I keep bringing him up all the time on my show is because people who are locked up tend to disappear from the public's point of view. So what is the latest? Can you give us an update the last few weeks, and then what's in the near future?
Well, I'm really glad you asked. I mean, Bradley Manning, and you can get really to details at bradleymanning.org, which is the Bradley Manning Support Network, which I'm part of. He's been having great legal representation in court, and his lawyer, David Coons, has been fighting hard to represent him in what seems like, to many of us, a kangaroo court. Mm-hmm. The prosecutors have been playing incredible hide-the-ball games when it comes to providing the defense with discovery, you know, documents and information that they have a right to have to prepare for the trial. Under Brady v. United States, it's a Supreme Court decision, prosecutors are required to provide the defense with, you know, material and relevant information, and there's a lot of that that's not being given to the defense, and so it's very hard to prepare for trial. As a result, the trial keeps getting put off in constant discovery fights, and the lawyers called for motion to dismiss on various charges that have been denied. He's been called for delay in the trial. He's been to try to have time to get discovery. It's just been a constant fight with the government. Now the trial looks like it may not happen until November, or maybe even later than that.
So
he'll be in jail for more than 2 years before he gets to a trial.
So all this discovery and everything else, I mean, basically, you're fighting blind in a way, right?
Exactly. We're fighting blind. And one of the key issues is whether these documents that he's accused of leaking should have even been classified. And the definition of something being classified is it has, you know, harm to the national security of the United States. And there have been several reviews done now by the CIA, by the Department of Justice, by the Department of Defense, by the State Department, looking at the damage that these documents being released evidently did. And the defense has been trying to get these reviews, and the government's been refusing to provide them. There may be no damage. I mean, in fact, Secretary Gates, the former Secretary of Defense, said that there was no damage. Secretary Clinton, the Secretary of State, has also minimized the impact, so in public comment. So there might be no damage at all, which would raise questions about the charges, but also raise questions about sentencing.
Right. So in other words, part of the charge is that he did great damage to the United States by looking.
The biggest charge he has, the most dangerous one, is aiding the enemy, and that's really gotten absurd. I mean, you know, they're not accusing Manning of intentionally giving material to Iran or China or, you know, selling material to Iran or China. They're saying that just by releasing the documents to the media, he should have known that the enemy would get the information.
Well, actually, the enemy did get the information because the enemy is truth.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. So
they're of course talking about Al Qaeda, and you know the truth is that any leak, any news report, so many things can aid the enemy. And so if you have this broad definition that you don't even have to intend to aid the enemy, it just happens to happen, you know, as a tangential impact of releasing a document. That's really a broad definition of aiding the enemy. In this case. It's hard also because both the Commander-in-Chief, President Obama, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have both said that Manning is guilty.
Well, yeah. I mean, can a case be thrown out if the Commander-in-Chief of the Army, of the Armed Forces, says that he's guilty in advance? I mean, any judge would throw that out in a civil case, right?
Well, there's a very strong doctrine in the military courts called undue command influence. Mm-hmm. And undue command influence can result in charges being dismissed. And I think this is an extreme case where the Commander-in-Chief and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have both said he's guilty. The Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said in a press conference that was published in the semi-official publication of the Department of Defense, Stars and Stripes. And so this is everyone who's in that courtroom works under the command of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Commander-in-Chief. And it's a very command structure-oriented place in the military, as everybody knows. And so when the commanders say he's guilty, how can you imagine a jury of officers finding him not guilty? It's almost hard to fathom that happening. So this is a tough case to defend, and it looks like a kangaroo court that really should be thrown out because of government misconduct and undue command influence.
What about the next couple of steps? I mean, is anything happening in July or August?
Yeah, there'll be continued pretrial hearings. They happen pretty regularly. There'll be about various motions, including the discovery battle that have been fought now for the last few months. And what we discovered, by the way, in the discovery battles, most recently was some documents that showed that the Department of the Army had not even begun to look for Brady material in their files. Mm-hmm. After a year of being requested to provide material, they have not even begun to look for it. I mean, so it's just obscene. And so those battles will continue. I'm sure there'll be motions dismissed based on undue command influence at some point, getting prepared for trial, and we'll get to trial maybe November. I'd say most likely in January is probably the best guess when trial will happen.
Well, in a case like that, in a court like this, in a military court, do any of the regular rules of discovery and, justice, to use a certain word, apply for the defendant?
Oh, yeah, they do. No question. For example, the Brady rule, which applies to civilian courts, also applies to military courts. There's no question about that. There are some differences between military courts and civilian courts, some better, some worse. On the worst side, they don't need a unanimous verdict.
Oh.
They need a supermajority verdict, and so you can have some people on the jury panel say, no, he's not guilty, and he can still be found guilty. So that's one thing that works against the defendant in the military trial. So there's some similarities and some differences. But either way, what you're seeing here is a system where the top people have said he's guilty, where the prosecutors are high in the evidence, where the kid, Bradley Manning, has been held in solitary confinement for nearly a year, prior to even being formally charged. So this is a case of constant abuse, and I really think it's time for a motion to dismiss based on government misconduct, this extreme government misconduct, and that's really where I hope this ends up. You know, with the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg, he was facing 100 years in jail as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in his case was it was a 4-month trial, and during that time period, the White House contacted the judge twice to offer the judge a job as the head of the FBI.
Hmm.
They also broke into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office and did other things as well. Those are the highlights. Finally, as the case was about to go to the jury, the judge dismissed the case for outrageous government conduct. That's where this case needs to go as well. The government conduct in this case is outrageous. This is something you're essentially charging Bradley Manning, accusing him for getting out the truth.
Now,
people who should be charged are the ones who are committing the crimes.
This was a judge in the case of Ellsberg. This was a case of a federal judge. Now,
that was a federal judge, right?
Can this court's opinion be appealed through the regular court
yes.
system?
It can go, well, there's a military court appeal system, and it'll go through the court of military appeals. It can, in the end, be judged by the U.S. Supreme Court, for example. Mm-hmm. So it can get into the civilian courts as well. But there is also a military court of review that, military court of appeals that would, you know, go through as well.
So, where do people go to help out or get information?
Get involved in, there's a lot going on. There's always a lot going on. The Bradley Manning Support Network is still raising money for his legal defense. It's about a $200,000 bill. You can go to bradleymanning.org to get involved in activities, actions, or to help to donate to his defense and to keep advocacy efforts going. So we could definitely use your support. There's a lot of support in the Occupy movement for Bradley Manning. People recognize that his effort for transparent government is very consistent with the direction the Occupy wants to see the country go as well.
You're listening to Kevin Zeese, who's a legal advisor for the Bradley Manning Support Group. So as far as the Affordable Care Act thing, where do people go to get involved with trying to get something like single payer?
Well, there's some great groups that are doing work on that. My group that filed an amicus brief urging the mandate to be found unconstitutional and upholding the rest of the law is itsoureconomy.us. itsoureconomy.us. Mm-hmm. The leading grassroots single payer group in the country is Healthcare Now. That's healthcarenow.org. And then there's the physicians group, Physicians for National Health Program. That's PNHP.org.
Okay.
Another very strong group is Single Payer Action, singlepayeraction.org. So there's a lot of people working on this. Our group, It's Our Economy, focuses on not just the healthcare, but to create a democratized economy. And that's what we're seeking, is to broaden people's power in their own lives and the economy, as well as influence on the economy more generally.
Maybe we could all figure out a way in the Occupy movement or people who support that to, if as long as we're talking about aiding the enemy, obviously the person who is aiding the enemy the most is the President of the United States. By his
activities. Well, the enemy is our criminal wars. I mean, that is what really undermines our national security and creates enemies. These drone attacks that he's involved in, picking the people who are getting killed, that's creating enemies. It's not a healthy thing for our national security. It's not a healthy thing for the rule of law. And it's really a bad direction for international relations to have these drone attacks in countries we're not even in war at.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot. Obviously, we're going to have to work on this kind of thing outside the electoral system as it stands now. So,
no question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Kevin Zeese, who is a legal advisor for the Bradley Manning Support Group. I think what we'll do is take a little bit of a break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about a couple of issues. We've got another guest around 1:30 who's going to talk about a recent Supreme Court decision on Monday, which basically reaffirms their horrible Citizens United decision, which is, of course, just reinforcing the fact that capitalism controls everything in the worst possible way in this country. So we'll take a short musical break, and then we'll be back. All right. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. You just heard Kevin Zeese, Z-E-E-S-E, who's one of those people that if you wish you had the ability to do it, you might want to emulate, right? If you didn't, if you weren't got a family. I don't know what his situation is. I don't know if he has a family support or anything like that. But this guy has been in it since 1980. He worked for Normal, you know, the group that wanted to legalized marijuana since 1980. This is like 32 years he's been an activist for every possible group. He's been arrested a number of times, standing up for what he believes in, always on the right side, using his law degree to the best possible effect. One of the, you know, although the Occupy movement is supposed to be sort of a horizontal thing, you know, no leaders. In fact, Kevin is an unspoken or undesignated leader of the Occupy movement, and he writes a lot of the most stirring, if not also clear and accessible speeches and statements for the Occupy movement all the time. He's part of Occupy Washington, D.C. So that's Kevin Zeese. And the Bradley Manning Support Group is something you might want to go to because really, you know, we're all in the same boat together. This guy just got, and I don't know, you know, everybody has got mixed motives for things. And there's no such thing as just somebody who's a hero or just a villain, right? Although maybe one or two people I could think of. But most of us fall somewhere in that gray area in between. And I'm sure that Bradley Manning had other motivations for what he did, but certainly one of his motivations, and I think it's probably pretty much unquestioned at this point after listening to him talk and people who know him, who were giving fairly objective points of view, is that he really did feel that what he was doing was wrong, that he, part of his job in Iraq was, because he was a computer specialist, was to actually, he was in Iraq and he was on the ground there, and it was to run around and track the activities of the Iraqi police and the Iraqi armed forces in coordination with us. And he personally observed not only just American troops, or but Iraqi troops under our direction or in cooperation with us. He observed them committing atrocities. And his job was just to log these things and coordinate everything. And he said, no, this isn't right. I can't do this. And he joined the military for all sorts of reasons, you know, to get some respect, to feel like he was a real man, whatever other reasons people have for joining the military, maybe some sense of patriotism. And then he's on the grounds, you know, taking a in a prominent part. He's in the city there in Baghdad and other places. He's on the ground and he's seeing what he's part of. He's seeing murder. He's seeing atrocity. He's seeing the worst sorts of behavior. And finally, he just started leaking these documents. Of course, the most famous thing that he leaked, and we could still all see it on YouTube, I presume, unless the government took it off, is the helicopter attack, the attack helicopter, which killed innocent people on the streets of Baghdad, and murdered people. And then when somebody came to their rescue, there was some people from Reuters and some other people came to the rescue of these people who were attacked, they shot them too. And you hear, you see the point of view of the helicopter, because that's what he leaked was a video. You see their point of view. You see people get shot. You see, and you hear, which is more frightening almost than anything else, what you hear is the pilot saying, oh, we got him, like it was a video game, just like it was a video game, like they hadn't actually killed people, innocent people even. There was no sense of propriety or sobriety. It was all like, yeah, let's, can we shoot him? You know, like they're all 14 years old. This is what the world sees when they see America. And this is what Bradley Manning saw and decided that he needed to get this to stop. And one way to do this, since nobody's telling the truth about anything, and they lock up anybody who tries to tell the truth, is to, you know, is to leak this stuff. And now I'm saying he leaked all this, and it's this strange thing where people assume that he did leak it all, although he is has not yet actually admitted that he leaked this stuff, and he's being charged with leaking it, and it hasn't been proved yet. So as I say, of course, that he did this, and so many other people do off the record or casually, the case is, in fact, did he do it? So they have to prove he did it, and they haven't done that yet. And secondly, if he, and that may not be so hard to prove. And secondly, if he did do it, you know, exactly what his motives were and what the damage was. And as you heard Kevin Zeese saying before, who is a legal advisor for Bradley Manning, there really hasn't been any proven damage. And when you look at the CIA, the State Department assessments of this, you don't see any proven damage. So, it's BradleyManningSupportGroup.org. I think it's .org. BradleyManningSupportGroup.org. And we're going to if you're involved in any automatic notifications online from various groups that you belong to, you're probably in a blizzard now of notifications about the health care, the Affordable Care Act decision by the Supreme Court, which was 5-4, but in a very twisted way to support the individual mandate. There's a lot of people who are going to be celebrating about that. And there's a lot of people who have already benefited by this act and who will benefit. There are millions of people who will benefit by this, people whose lives will be saved. However, in the long run, on a deeper, wider basis, this was actually, and I guess sadly and ironically, a bad day for, forget about the people on the right who don't really want anybody to get anything. They're just basically selfish people. But for people, you know, who are liberals who say, oh, this is wonderful, you know, or people who support President Obama who still support President Obama, I should say, in their blindness. You know, they'll say, oh, this is a wonderful thing for his campaign. His major program was approved. No, it's not a wonderful thing. In the end, it's a bad thing because there's nothing in that law. There's nothing really. There's no teeth in that law to stop health insurance companies from doing what they have already done. And we all know what they've already done. And if you have health insurance, you know that they have raised copays and they've raised deductibles. They're raising premiums. They're raising things all over the place. There's no control over them. This bill is essentially a deal done with the pharmaceutical companies and the healthcare companies. And this is what's happened. It's provided them with millions of new customers. People will now be fined if they don't buy health insurance. I'm not so sure I agreed with that individual mandate myself. You know, maybe that's one place where people on the left and the right could probably have some agreement. But this is a Band-Aid. This bill is a Band-Aid, and basically the Band-Aid is a $100 Band-Aid sold to you by the health insurance companies. It's a Band-Aid over a much deeper illness, which is the health care system in this country and the, you know, and the insurance companies. And, you know, obviously it should be Medicare for all. So that this bill gets passed, it's almost a bad thing. There, you know, I mean, if you look at it from a certain philosophical point of view or maybe even a realistic point of view, if they had defeated it, if the Supreme Court had decided that the whole law was invalid, then, you know, all hell would be to pay. On the other hand, then we could possibly start from scratch and have single payer, which is the easiest thing in the world to do. The bill would be about five sentences long, not as big as two phone books. And it would just benefit everybody in this country, except who? Except the health insurance companies and the drug companies and the prostitute politicians that work for them. That's who it wouldn't benefit. So this is what you've got. This is what we have now. And the president will run on this as a great achievement, and, you know, he'll feel very proud of himself. But there's not that much to feel proud of. Making deals with corporations that buy and sell politicians is nothing really to be proud of. Meanwhile, we're going to try to find our second guest. Do we have our guest on yet? I don't know. Our guest is supposed to call in from the Brennan Center for Justice. And recently on Monday, the Supreme Court's been very busy this week. They made a decision the other day on immigration, on the immigration law, Arizona's immigration law, in which they let the worst part of the bill stand. They got rid of other parts of the bill, basically because they said the state of Arizona has no right to be meddling in things that are the province of the federal government. But they let the worst part of the bill stand, which is that a police officer can stop anybody anytime and ask them for papers to prove that they're an American citizen. So the basically the Nazi section of the bill, where are your papers section of the bill, is preserved. So that was decided by the Supreme Court. The other thing decided by the Supreme Court was on Monday, and that is what we're going to talk about when we get our guest on the line. Do we have our guest yet? No? Okay. So what did they decide on Monday is that Montana, the state of Montana, has had a law on the books for 100 years. For 100 years, they've had a law on the books in the state of Montana, which was passed because of severe and obvious crippling corporate corruption out of Montana. I don't know when Montana became a state, but maybe right around then. But Montana passed a law, which was upheld by various levels of the court, and it was upheld by their Supreme Court, that forbade corporate involvement in campaign funding, especially any kind of anonymous corporate funding. In other words, they didn't want corporations to do what they're doing now because of Citizens United, is set up these bullshit PACs, which are really just contributions to politicians. They didn't want them to pollute and corrupt the political system, which can only happen as soon as a corporation or rich people get involved in the political system. If you know anything about American history, you know that it was only about halfway through the history of this country that we got to elect our own senators. State legislatures, up until, I don't know when it was, 1908, 1910, something like that. I could be off by a few years in either direction. State legislatures used to appoint senators to make laws that rule our country and spend our money. Can you imagine the state legislature? If you know about, I don't know about the state legislature in your state, but just pick one like Texas, Texas, which is up there with New York. New York, by the way, I'm, you know, there's a certain amount of pride here. I'm a New Yorker. New York has, for the last something like 20 or 30 years, led the rest of the country in having the most polluted, corrupt legislature. Maybe no more than 3 months goes by. No more than 3 months goes by when you don't see, there's never a 3 month period where you don't see a member of the state assembly of New York or the state legislature indicted for the worst sleazy sort of corruption. I mean, it's an astounding, place. It's just basically a mafia hangout, the state legislature in New York. It's corruption and patronage of the worst possible sort. And people are constantly setting up fake clinics that don't treat anybody and paying out millions of dollars to their own relatives. These are state senators. So somebody was sentenced 2 days ago for this kind of behavior. So New York is the worst, right? But Texas is pretty bad. The state legislature in Texas is pretty bad. In fact, I talked to a guy who's a reporter in Dallas, and I interviewed him on another radio station. He told me that the place where the corporations sit in the state legislature, in the the state capitol, the place where they sit, they have a routine place to sit, the lobbyists, it's called the owner's box. The owner's box. That's what Texas is like, right? I mean, you know, you can buy politicians all the time, and it happens more and more all the time. Look at Scott Walker, who is basically a hand puppet for David and Charles Koch. He actually was caught a phone conversation, or portions of a phone conversation was leaked, or was an email conversation where he basically said, "Yeah, I'm getting the job done," you know. And somebody called up. Oh, I know. Somebody also called up once and impersonated David Koch and fooled Scott Walker. This was in public. He was on the radio or something and fooled him into thinking it was actually him. No, this was recorded actually, off the air because it gives it its punch. And he said, "Hi, this is Charles or David, whatever, Koch brother." And he said, "We should have you down to the farm and down to the ranch or something in California. You know, you're doing a great job for us." And Scott Walker, actually believing it was one of the Koch brothers who actually own him, said, yeah, I'm glad you think so. I appreciate that. I'm working hard to do what we agreed on." So this is what goes on. So the state of Montana decided in 1912, the court, they passed a law in 1912. It was subsequently challenged in Montana and there was all kinds of reviews. And they decided that it was wrong. Get that? I mean, when it comes down to laws, sometimes you can think of, yeah, it's complicated. Human nature is complicated. The law is complicated. But they decided it was just wrong. It wasn't fair. It wasn't equal, as the United States is supposed to be in its ideal practice and according to the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. It was wrong to let very, very rich people and corporations who are not, especially corporations who are not people, despite what Mitt Romney and the Supreme Court thinks, to have such influence on who gets elected and who runs for office and what the issues are. So they passed a law saying it was, punishable by X numbers of years in prison and tremendous fines. You can't do it. And this worked its way up all the way since Citizens United was passed. The decision from the Supreme Court came down in, I think it was 2010. This law in Montana was challenged by right-wing people saying, since Citizens United has been passed, obviously corporations are just folks like the rest of us. They can spend all the money they want in Montana. They said no. So there was a big argument. It makes it all the way to the Montana Supreme Court. And the Montana Supreme Court upheld the law, which the intelligent people of Montana had passed, forbidding corporations to tamper in elections because you see what you get with that, right? It's not as if they're not paying money under the table or they're breaking laws all the time. But, this rule by the Supreme Court, which makes it official that corporations legally, now own and run America. You know, we used to have even, the illusion that if we voted or if we sent money into our candidate of our choice, they'd have a choice or we'd have a chance to be represented. No, there's no illusion anymore. The Supreme Court and Citizens United officially told all the rest of us, all us roaches and suckers, otherwise known as voters, that our representatives belong to rich people and corporations, some of whom are sitting on the bench of the Supreme Court, I guess. But they do not belong. The Congress and the presidency don't belong to us. They don't work for us anymore. They used to work for us. We paid their salaries. Our taxes, it doesn't matter. They can take our taxes, but we have no say in anything. We have no control over anything. And if you see the way the rules are going and the laws that are being signed into law by Mr. Hopi Change lately, not to sound like Sarah Palin, but he is becoming more of a dictator, and I use that word in a considered way. Look it up in the dictionary. He's becoming more of a dictator than even Bush was. Obama has signed more laws and presided over this, the passing of more rules, ordinances, and laws in various local places, which he's been like in Chicago with his old buddy Rahm Emanuel, and Tampa and Charlotte, where the political conventions are going to take place. And this is because of the Occupy movement. He's presided over these things and signed more laws that make it more illegal now than it has ever been to express dissent in any way in this country, to protest, to physically protest, to assemble, which is supposed to be our right under the First Amendment, to express disagreement or anger or rage in any kind of organized way, or to protest. It's almost like being a terrorist now, according to all the laws that have been signed. That's only one side of it. That's only one part of it. The other part of it is that there is more spying going on now. There are hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on billions of dollars. I'm sure when we're talking about millions, I'm living in the old-fashioned world. Right? There's almost $1 trillion being spent for the National Security Agency and the CIA and other groups that are spying, and the Department of Homeland Security, $1 trillion, $1,000 billion, which, by the way, you know, these figures, that amount of money would provide solar heating and alternative, you know, energy, solar energy and alternative energy for every person living in the United States for 5 years. It would hire back every teacher, every cop, every fireman, every employee who is necessary to our health and welfare. Would hire them all back and be able to give them raises. It would supply 10 million jobs in decent industries. But $1 trillion is spent on the Department of Homeland Security and the National Security Agency on spying on us, on containing us, American citizens, who have violated no rules, have broken no laws. But now we are breaking laws. In fact, probably just by saying these things, I'm certainly on some list somewhere. And what makes it even worse is they pass these laws and they don't even give you fair notice. Did you know that there's a law now, and I may have the exact details wrong, but there's a law that was just signed, a federal law that the president signed, that makes it a felony to protest or to appear in an unauthorized manner within, I forget what it is, 1,000 feet of any federal official or candidate who is protected by Secret Service agents. Whoever the Secret Service agent is protecting at any given moment, a federal officer or federal agent or somebody running for office, it's against the law if you appear in an unauthorized certain distance away from them. Now, they pass these laws. You don't even know you're breaking the law. You could go out and protest outside of a convention hall, wherever the president or the vice president is speaking, or wherever the secretary of state is, or somebody, and they can lock you up and charge you with violating a federal law. That's right. That's right. And it's against the law. And local cities are doing this all over the place. And these things are being challenged. But the ACLU would have to be, you know, would have to have 1,000 new lawyers to deal with all the right-wing suppression of our freedoms in this country. It would have to be 10 times the size, 100 times the size it is. Tampa and Charlotte, where the conventions are going to take place in August and September, have passed local ordinances making it, you know, a felony to even just, you don't have to be there yelling and screaming or holding an object or threatening anybody, just to be within something like 1,000 yards of the convention halls or to get anywhere near a motorcade, you can get locked up. And this is under a quote unquote Democratic administration. This guy is no more a Democrat in the actual sense of the word than any right-wing, dictator ever was. I mean, and just because he's charming and he smiles and occasionally makes the right choice about something or makes a reflective decision about something or pushes to help people in some way, which he does, he is still, when it comes to matters of the Bill of Rights and dissent, he is still essentially acting like a dictator. And the worst one of all, of course, is the National Defense Authorization Act, which is basically kind of a rider which includes all kinds of things, a rider to the bill which appropriates money, you know, for the Defense Department, the War Department, I should say. And part of this that he signed, which was about 3 months ago, and he asked Congress to pass this law, by the way. There was some talk, which I'm sure his office put out, some spin, that he didn't really want these kinds of powers. Well, that's utter nonsense. Obama wants all the power he can get, and more than you could possibly imagine. Maybe more than he can imagine. He has no idea how he grabs for power, this guy. What the psychoanalysis of it is, I don't really know. Here's a guy who had no father, and his mother basically ignored him a lot of the time, too, you know, left him behind. So he's got a chip on his shoulder as big as Mount Everest, right? Only, and you could tell this, right? If you pay attention to the way people act, it's not always the people who are screaming and yelling or turning purple in the face or pounding their fist down on things. It is often not those people who have, you know, an axe to grind or a big chip. It's the quiet, controlled ones, the ones who are seething with rage that they don't even know they have, who want a certain kind of order. I've never seen a general, except for Bush, but he was a clown and a tool. You know, remember him landing on the aircraft carrier? You know, mission accomplished. Here's a guy who avoided service in Vietnam. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. So did I. But he was the president's, he was the vice president's son, right? His dad was the head of the CIA at the time, whatever daddy was doing. Anyhow, he avoids getting drafted by pulling strings. His father went to the commanding general in Texas, of the Texas Air National Guard, and basically used his influence and said, I don't want my son to be drafted and go to Vietnam and get killed like those other saps. You know, so what can you do for him? So he jumps ahead of people illegally. This guy should be in jail for 1,000 reasons. Bush should be wearing an orange jumpsuit and chopping rocks. If he wants to whack weeds, he could do it on a prison farm. That's where this man belongs. And I have to say, these days, Obama could probably join him and help him out knocking down weeds. So Bush gets into the Air National Guard in Texas, jumping ahead of other qualified people because his father had all this influence, and who knows, worse than influence, he could threaten anybody. If the head of the CIA comes to you and says, you know, he wants you to do him a favor, you might think, what would happen if I don't? Especially if you have a career in the military, right? So he gets into the Texas Air National Guard, and he gets into the Air National Guard. He doesn't even show up for his training. Half the time, or more than half the time, he didn't even show up for his training. This chicken-hearted little son of a bitch president, right? So what does he do to make up for all this? He lands on the deck, but he learned how to fly a jet, right? He learned how to fly a jet. So he lands on the deck of an aircraft carrier, dressed in flight uniform, which was so embarrassing that, you know, the whole world is laughing at America. And, you know, it was embarrassing to be an American at that time. In fact, it's generally embarrassing to be an American now. And I say that with a kind of sadness. I do. I say that with what Lyndon Johnson used to say, but I'm saying in a serious way, a heavy heart. Because it's sad to live in a place. It's sad to be the citizen of or a member of a country which terrorizes other countries, which kills people, which rains down death from above, which sends explosives and explosions 1,000 miles away pressing a button, where somebody's 12,000 miles away and activates a drone that shoots a missile and blows up a wedding party or something. Innocent people, children scattered in parts. You can't even tell one part from another after a drone gets through hitting one of these places. It's disgusting and a shameful thing to be an American now. We're not doing anything wrong. We're not killing people. We're not invading countries. We're not taking bribes. But the people in our government are. The people in our government are doing this. That is why there's an Occupy movement. That is why there's an Occupy movement. And if you didn't tune in, if you just tuned in late, actually, if you're listening to this on a podcast, you have heard the whole thing. But if you tuned in late live today, Gary Null has agreed to come on next week on Occupied Territory here. And we're going to talk to him. We have a conversation about what he thinks about the Occupy movement and what he thinks about violence, nonviolence, about the electoral system, that kind of thing. So that will be next week. You can stay tuned for that. Gary's always interesting to listen to. If you could agree with him or disagree with him, but this guy knows a lot and speaks beautifully and has a good amount of wisdom and is not shy, if you've heard Gary, about his opinions. So I'm looking forward to that. Meanwhile, back to what I was saying. So you've got the president Bush. You know, obviously he was in love with the military, right? He was, you know, this made him a real man. Mission accomplished, and of course it wasn't accomplished. That may be the most stupid, shameful thing that any president has ever done in American history. Although the bar has been raised very high by people like Bush. But Obama is also subject to this same disease. He never had a man around. He has no idea. And I know what I'm talking about. I didn't. My father wasn't around when I was growing up. And my uncle was a nice guy, but basically was a wholly owned subsidiary of my grandmother, like every other man in my entire family, right? She was a matriarchy. So Mr. Obama grows up without a father, and he grows up, and it's his mother and his grandmother. He doesn't really know what it's like to be a man. So he gets to be the president of the United States. He's got all the power in the world, right? And what does he do? He surrounds himself with, A, every felonious son of a bitch on Wall Street that talks big and wears an expensive suit and knows things because he's a manly man. And that's he puts in the Treasury Department, his economic advisors. He hires the same guys who destroyed America to help him revive America, right? No chance there. But they're real men, you know? These are real men. Summers, Geithner, these guys, you know, they got their degrees and they got their suits on and they're all bulked up with self-importance and money, which they eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then, even worse, though, is the way that Obama surrounds himself with generals and the way he glories in killing people. This guy clearly, although he's very apparently, you know, you read the New York Times, which is basically a press agent for the Obama administration. He's very sober about his decisions that result in the death of American citizens or foreign nationals overseas. Yeah, right. So he doesn't smile when he's doing it. He doesn't smirk like Bush did when he landed on the aircraft carrier. Bush, you knew where you stood with him. He was an asshole, right? He was happy about people getting killed, you know, capital punishment in the state of Texas. He laughed. He lands on the aircraft carrier knowing that he had a phony war, if he knew. Knowing that people, that tens of thousands of people had already died, hundreds of thousands of people had been injured, a whole country destroyed, we're in a fake war, we're using up hundreds of billions of dollars, and the country is going broke because he won't raise taxes. He used to smirk about it. So you knew that you were dealing with a little pinheaded asshole, President Bush, right? But when it comes to Obama, because he's got the advanced degree, because he's so smart, because he's sober, because he gives long, reflective answers to questions, doesn't make him any less dangerous or power hungry. And he really is. This guy's extraordinary because he was never in his own mind a man, or didn't know what it was like to be a man, or felt like sort of picked on or brought up by women. He is making up for it big time, and we're paying the price for it. He surrounds himself with generals. He sits there and he launches raids against people. He orders the death of other people. He sees the SEAL team on a private, you know, scope that the CIA gives them to look at when they're executing, you know, people who are our enemies. He watches drone strikes. He launches attacks that kill people, and especially even American citizens, no matter how vile these American citizens are. I forget what the man's name was, who we get the cleric in Yemen, who supplied materials and advice to various people who wanted to destroy, you know, airports and other places. Yeah, he was a son of a bitch, and he was a slimy, you know, terrorist and a murderer. He was actually a terrorist, not you and me, but he was. And he got killed. But the president loves this stuff. Did you see his last State of the Union address? He's got, if he could actually literally have wrapped himself, you know that phrase? He wrapped himself in the flag. If he could have worn an American flag, he would have. There was a flag behind him, you know, the camera angle. There was a flag behind him. If he could actually have wrapped it around him when he was making that speech. And then he said something so extraordinary that I don't think people know the importance of it yet. People who write history books will write this. Well, we'll know this. We'll note, you know, note this and write it down. He said that of all the things that gave him, a wonderful feeling, of the greatest things he's ever done, of all the noble and wonderful things he was able to do as president, or that he ever imagined doing as president, was to be the commander in chief of such heroes as the men, you know, who killed bin Laden, as the men and women in the armed forces. Really? Oh, really? This country used to go out of its way not to have a standing army. We regarded the army as, yes, brave people who in time of difficulty or trouble, when we were threatened in this country, essentially, that they stood up and defended our lives. The men who fought in the War of 1812, in the Revolutionary War, the men who fought during the Civil War, the men who fought in World War II. After that, go find a good war, right? So we admire these people. We're in awe of these people sometimes. They sacrificed their lives. They spent years of their lives. Their marriages, their families fell apart. The Dear John letters, right? They got killed. They came back wounded. They came back destroyed. Hundreds of thousands, millions of men who did this, right? So we're in awe. We're in reverence for them. That's true. But for him to stand up there in what is essentially peacetime and say that his greatest feeling and his greatest glory as president was to be the commander-in-chief of these people in the armed forces, he's got his priorities so screwed up, he doesn't know which way his head is turned. And that's because he never knew what it was like to be a man. And now he's surrounding himself with General Mick Ripper, or whatever the guy's name is, who's in charge of special ops. Did you see that guy? He looks like something who jumped out of a video game. He doesn't even look real. He's got, you know, he looks chiseled, you know, he's got the haircut. I think Obama gets some kind of thrill that I can't even possibly describe out of being around all these generals. He gets, I don't want to go into that. This is not a show about psychoanalysis. But this man is just so happy to have the generals stand around him. He just gets ramrod stiff himself being around these generals. And everybody has to die for this. And we all have to become terrorists. That is why there's an Occupy movement. And I'd like you to get involved in this with me, at least a discussion. Go to the Occupied Territory Facebook page. You can Google Occupied Territory and Facebook. Google Occupied Territory and Facebook, and you will go to our Facebook page, post comments, videos. The show will be on there in podcast. And join us next week when we talk to Gary Nell, get his opinions on the Occupy movement.